Chapter 32. This place is not safe, and you've sent him up this awful river, where he may lose his head. If he dies before forgiving me, heaven will punish you for your crime. My crime. I ask myself sometimes, whether I am dreaming. It will make me ill, all this. I've lost my appetite already. He flung his hat on deck, and laid hold of his hair despairingly. Lingard looked at him with concern. What did she mean by it, he muttered, thoughtfully. Mean? She is crazy, I tell you, and I will be, very soon, if this lasts. Just a little patience, Casper, pleaded Lingard. A day or so more. Relieved or tired by his violent outburst, Almayer calmed down, picked up his hat, and, leaning against the bulwark, commenced to fan himself with it. Days do pass, he said, resignedly, but that kind of thing makes a man old before his time. What is there to think about? I can't imagine. Abdullah says plainly that, if you undertake to pilot his ship out and instruct the half-caste, he will drop Willems like a hot potato, and be your friend ever after. I believe him perfectly, as to Willems. It's so natural. As to being your friend, it's a lie, of course, but we need not bother about that just yet. You just say yes to Abdullah, and then whatever happens to Willems will be nobody's business. He interrupted himself and remained silent for a while, glaring about with set teeth and dilated nostrils. You leave it to me. I'll see to it that something happens to him, he said at last, with calm ferocity. Lingard smiled faintly. The fellow isn't worth a shot. Not the trouble of it, he whispered, as if to himself. Almayer fired up suddenly. That's what you think, he cried. Who haven't been sewn up in your hammock, to be made a laughing stock of before a parcel of savages? Why? I daren't look anybody here in the face, while that scoundrel is alive. I will. I will settle him. I don't think you will, growled Lingard. Do you think I am afraid of him? Bless you. No, said Lingard with alacrity. Afraid? Not you. I know you. I don't doubt your courage. It's your head, my boy, your head that I doubt, that's it, said the aggrieved Almayer. Oan, why don't you call me a fool at once? Because I don't want to, burst out Lingard, with nervous irritability. If I wanted to call you a fool, I would do so without asking your leave. He began to walk athwart the narrow quarter-deck, kicking rope's ends out of his way and growling to himself. Elocate gentleman. What next? I've done man's work before you could toddle. Understand? Say what I like. Well, said Almayer, with affected resignation. There's no talking to you these last few days. He put on his hat, strolled to the gangway and stopped, one foot on the little inside ladder, as if hesitating, came back and planted himself in Lingard's way, compelling him to stand still and listen. Of course you will do what you like. You never take advice, I know that, but let me tell you that it wouldn't be honest to let that fellow get away from here. If you do nothing, that scoundrel will leave in Abdullah's ship for sure. Abdullah will make use of him to hurt you and others elsewhere. Willems knows too much about your affairs. He will cause you lots of trouble. You mark my words. Lots of trouble. To you and to others perhaps. Think of that, Captain Lingard. That's all I've got to say. Now I must go back on shore. There's lots of work. We will begin loading this schooner tomorrow morning, first thing. All the bundles are ready. If you should want me for anything, hoist some kind of flag on the mainmast. At night two shots will fetch me. Then he added, in a friendly tone, won't you come and dine in the house tonight? It can't be good for you to stew on board like that, day after day. Lingard did not answer. The image evoked by Almayer, the picture of Willems ranging over the islands, and disturbing the harmony of the universe by robbery, treachery, and violence, held him silent, entranced, painfully spellbound. Almayer, after waiting for a little while, moved reluctantly towards the gangway, lingered there, then sighed and got over the side, going down step by step. His head disappeared slowly below the rail. Lingard, who had been staring at him absently, started suddenly, ran to the side, and looking over, called out, "Hey! Casper! Hold on a bit!" Almayer signed to his boatman to cease paddling, and turned his head towards the schooner. The boat drifted back slowly abreast of Lingard, nearly alongside. "Look here," said Lingard, looking down, "want a good canoe with four men today." "Do you want it now?" asked Almayer. "No. Catch this rope." "Oh, you clumsy devil, no, Casper," went on Lingard, after the bowman had got hold of the end of the brace he had thrown down into the canoe. "Oh, Casper, the sun is too much for me, and it would be better to keep my affairs quiet too. Send the canoe for good paddlers, mind, and your canvas chair for me to sit in. Send it about sunset. Do you hear?" "All right, father," said Almayer, "cheerfully we'll send Ali for a steersman, and the best men I've got. Anything else?" "No, my lad. Only don't let them be late." "I suppose it's no use asking you where you are going," said Almayer, tentatively. "Because if it is to see Abdullah, I am not going to see Abdullah. Not today. Now be off with you." He watched the canoe dart away shorewards, waved his hand in response to Almayer's nod, and walked to the taffrail smoothing out Abdullah's letter, which he had pulled out of his pocket. He read it over carefully, crumpled it up slowly, smiling the while and closing his fingers firmly over the crackling paper, as though he had hold there of Abdullah's throat. Halfway to his pocket he changed his mind, and flinging the ball overboard looked at it thoughtfully as it spun round in the eddies for a moment, before the current bore it away downstream, towards the sea. Part IV. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.